And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this week starts a new year for Jewish people. Rosh Hashanah is this week. Yep. So, happy New Year to you.
Tuesday. Same to you and yours.
Thank you. And to any of our listeners who are observant and celebrating and not eating next week, happy New Year to you and happy break fasting afterwards to you also.
Right.
Meanwhile, right. Bill Kristol, one of our tribe, says the Democrats should now claim that they are the true party of Lincoln. And you know there's something in that.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. The Republicans keep stealing things from Democrats when things work. You know, I was listening to something this week, a recording of Ted Cruz down in Texas in Laredo, talking about all the bipartisan work he did to get a new roadway that they've been trying to get for 20 years put into the transportation bill, and taking credit for it, and then purposely omitting the fact that he voted against the bill. this is what the Republicans are, but I thought it's true. The Democrats now are by far more Lincoln-esque than the Republicans are. This is the
Republicans have starting with Nixon and the adoption of the Southern Strategy, which was a strategy to absorb the racist politicians that dominated the Democratic Party in the South, to absorb them into the Republican Party, which was successful. Strom Thurmond, the leader of the Dixiecrats, joined the Republicans, and the Trump MAGA Republicans are a racist party. They can't claim the mantle to... Now, Lincoln was anti-slavery. He wasn't necessarily anti-racist. In fact, he wasn't anti-racist. But he was anti-slavery. But these people, they are proposing slavery in many respects. In fact, we have Republican people who say women shouldn't have the right to vote. The 19th Amendment should be repealed. Right?
Yeah. That's what we used to call the fringes are now mainstream in the Republican Party. Stuart Stevens wrote that book. He's a longtime Republican operative, and he said, we used to think that these people were the recessive gene of the party. It turns out they're the dominant gene. You have charlatans like Dinesh D'Souza, who once had a reputation as a somewhat of a smart guy.
He might be a smart guy. He's just a reactionary guy.
But he's gone fully off the rails. He's decided that he's going to make his money as a contrarian, telling racist people what they want to hear.
He himself is a minority in America.
Yeah, yeah. But he talks about, not without a grain of truth, the fact that it was the Democratic Party that was the racist party for so long. The problem with post-Civil War, post-Reconstruction era, Woodrow Wilson, and whatever. But what happens is he stops his history at 1948 when Hubert Humphrey got the Democrats to adopt a civil rights plank, and Harry Truman desegregated the military. And it was all downhill after that in terms of the Democrats. And you mentioned Strom Thurmond, who ultimately in 1964 left the Democratic Party for the Republican Party.
Well, he left it really in 1948 when he ran as the president for the Dixiecrat Party, and he got a whole bunch of college votes.
Right. Well, he called himself states' rights Democrats at that time, but that was, he lasted until 1964. He went back in the fold. But now we know where the parties stand, and it's a twist of fate or a twist of history. But I think Bill Kristol's onto something, and it's a takeaway from the Republicans, and it's a way to emphasize what they've become. And of course, in Pennsylvania, we have Doug Mastriano. We have this nationwide Christian nationalist movement, which is really white supremacy in terms of being a movement. And, you know, another group of dissident Republicans, the Lincoln Project, we're back to Lincoln, this week put out an ad that's pretty devastating.
Damn good ad.
Yeah. If people, you know, go on Lincoln Project or on YouTube and just, you know, Lincoln Project Mastriano, I'm sure you'll find it, where they call him an out-and-out anti-Semite, in no uncertain terms about the things that
they don't only call it, they document it.
Yeah, in his own, the own words and the own actions that he's taken. And,
by the way, he's proud of it. He's not, doesn't deny it.
You know, he's running a very interesting campaign. We've talked about this. He has done no ads for his campaign. The ads that you see on his campaign are all paid for by either Republican groups, Republican governors groups, or, you know, these Commonwealth Fund type groups, the dark money groups. And by the way, I don't know if you saw this week that the Democrats blocked the attempt by Democrats to pass a bill that would have to reveal the donors to these dark money groups. That if you give $10,000 or more in any way, in any one cycle to one of these groups, that you have to, your name has to be disclosed. And the Republicans don't want that. They, you know, this is part of their behind the scenes funding of all these things, you know.
And the truth is, if it were revealed, I think what it would show is that there's really a very small number of people who are responsible for 90% of the funding of the ultra-right.
Yeah, and we know their names, the Koch brothers, the DeVosses, the U-Lines. I still get a catalog once or twice a year from the U-Lines, office supply type of stuff.
Right.
It's massive. It's like the old Sears catalogs used to be. And I immediately put it in the metal recycling bin.
Right. Yeah.
I wouldn't buy anything from them. But then there's a couple of groups you never heard of. And again, that's that goes to that book that I've been recommending, Shadow Network by Ann Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
You learn these things on that. So in any event, that's what it is. There's one of these groups is putting ads out against Matt Cartwright, accusing him of unethical behavior and what have you. And this week he's responded in kind, and what he has to do, you know, he gets up there and looks right in the camera and says, this is a lie. And then he pivots and says, this is what I've been doing for the people, voting on these things. I think it could be a little more direct even, and, you know, let's start attacking Republican brand, that they're against all this stuff. The Democrats are a little timid on this because they want to curry some Republican votes.
There are no Republican votes to curry.
Well, there's the dissidents that have gotten out of the party, the Stuart Stevens, the Lincoln Project, that those kind of guys. But beyond that, there aren't many. There aren't many. By the way, talking about ex-Republicans, the polling in Utah is neck and neck.
In Utah?
In Utah, with the Democrats pulled out, and they're backing Evan McMullen as an independent against Mike Lee, who's been a fairly radical Republican in what he's done. So we've seen that, and we also saw in Arizona where the GOP is essentially pulled out of the Blake Masters campaign. He's down about 11 or 12 points, supposedly. Although that's not the only race that counts in Arizona. There's the Secretary of State race, where you have this election denier,
Mark Fincham,
and he's up by about 5 points from what I understand in the latest polls. Meanwhile, polls in Pennsylvania look good for Josh Shapiro right now. He's up 11. Fetterman's is up, they say, by 5. These polls have been kind of back and forth between 5, 4, 5 and 11, 10, 11 on these two races. So I don't think anything can be taken for granted. Although, you know, one of Oz's attacking points this week or the last couple weeks has been Fetterman's health.
Well, that's exactly his whole campaign at this point.
Well, now he's pivoted also to the scare tactics about crime. And he's using some of Fetterman's past against him. But about the health issue, first of all, you seem to see that Fetterman is gaining, his strength back. He's out more. He's campaigning.
Yeah, his physical strength, his recovery from the stroke.
Right. And he's getting big crowds. He's getting big crowds. Thousands of people are coming out, 1,000, 1,500 and whatever. And he's not just doing it in the big cities. But, Oz, he's made some real unforced errors in his campaign. That picture of him kissing his Hollywood Walk of Fame star, and the thing about crudité and not getting the talking about Wegmans and not getting the store name right, either Wegmans or Redners. And this week he came out with what he thought was going to be a positive, and it was another blunder. He released the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette said that both candidates should release their medicals. And so Oz got his doctor to release a letter stating some specifics about his blood pressure and his prostate and what have you. And it was a good letter. The only problem is that his doctor is on Fifth Avenue in New York and not in Pennsylvania. And, that's been the thrust of the Fetterman campaign. He's not one of us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's from North Jersey. That's mm-hmm. where people in North Jersey would go for their health. You'd think, Oz got his training at the University of Pennsylvania. Couldn't he go to a doctor there for a physical and getting a letter?
Maybe he doesn't think there are any good doctors in Pennsylynia.
How's that for a representative
of Pennsylvania?
Yeah. If I were a doctor in Pennsylvania, I'd be pretty ticked off.
Yeah.
I'd be pretty ticked off. So,
think of it this way. This guy Oz, his campaign has been so inept. And it's about himself, right? I mean, the campaign is not about big social issues. It's all about himself. Well, if he can't make judgments about himself that are any good, why would he make judgments about you or me that would be any good?
And that should be the thrust of the ads.
Yeah.
That should be the thrust. You can't trust his judgment.
They have that one ad
about this woman talking about all of the products, the supplements and things that he's pushed, the phony stuff. And essentially she's saying, he was all for himself. He profited from selling these supplements and they did no good. And they do have him under oath for Congress where he says none of these things will work without a good diet and exercise, which they'll work without those things if you have a good diet and exercise.
That's exactly right. Well, I hope Fetterman goes after him. I mean, in his campaign, Oz's campaign is a scurrilous campaign.
Right.
He had a stroke, therefore he can't be the senator. Listen, if Fetterman couldn't speak, he'd already say better things than Oz, who could speak. Because what's in Oz's head is terrible. What he wants to do is terrible. What he would vote for is terrible.
Right. And voting has already started. Pennsylvania absentee ballots are now out. So we'll see. The Republicans are still trying to go against that. I'm hoping to write another op-ed in the paper prior to Election Day about all the efforts to undermine voting. And this is one of the things. In Arizona, where you have a huge amount of mail-in ballots, some states like Utah and Oregon are all mail-in ballots. I think Colorado has mostly mail-in ballots.
Arizona has been for years. It's not just the last 6 months.
Right,
for years.
Arizona has a lot of write-in ballots. And the Republicans went to court in Arizona seeking to invalidate the law that allows for write-in ballots.
That's their strategy. It's a good strategy.
Well,
and it's going to work in many places.
In some places it will work. In other places,
all they have to do is tie up the machinery of voting so that it doesn't work, so that it's creaky, so that it's slow, so that on election day, the lines are so long that you don't stand in line. You go home and you don't vote. Then they win.
Well, yeah. They turn us into a third world country.
I got nothing against the third world. It's just that what they do is they get rid of the pretense of American democracy.
And that's what's on the ballot in this election. That's what's on the ballot in this election.
And that's the MAGA campaign. That's the MAGA strategy.
Yeah.
Get rid of democracy. And to the credit of some of these MAGA politicians, they say it openly. Democracy is wrong. We shouldn't aspire to have a democratic system.
Yeah, and their backers, like Peter Thiel, says that.
Yeah. That's right.
They say we're a republic, not a democracy, but a republic depends on people voting. And what they really are for is minority rule.
Their rule. They don't want the minority that they're not part of to rule.
Right, right. Their rule. And which is what elections are all about. And that was the one thing about Donald Trump. You know, up to Donald Trump, the Republican Party didn't say these things out loud. They used code words. Law and order, for it was a big code word. Lee Atwater type of ads that they had, that Atwater apologized for before he died. But Donald Trump came out and said these things out loud. I mean, he said what George Wallace was saying in 1968. And the party decided that they'd go along with it, or the MAGAs would go along with it. Now, interestingly, you know, talk about Donald Trump. He did not have a very good week in court this week, either on federal suits or in state suits. And it's going to be interesting, you know. His strategy was to tie things up in court, like tie voters up. And
delay. That's his thing. Delay.
And he requested a special master over the documents that the FBI seized pursuant to a court order.
And the judge gave him a special master with powers exceeding what he asked for.
Yeah. And the special master was the master that Donald Trump required or requested.
Yeah, he asked for this one particular individual. The Department of Justice said, okay, we'll go. We'll take him.
He was a senior judge from that Ronald Reagan had appointed many years ago.
John Deary.
John Deary. He was a FISA court judge who understood top secret and things like that. And lo and behold, the Trump lawyers get in front of John Deary and they get their heads handed to them. Essentially, he says, "You're claiming that these things were, not classified anymore." He said, "Where's your proof?" And they had none. They said, "Well, we can't tell you that because we may have to use certain things in a criminal defense." And the judge says, "Well, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too." He went right through it. He said, unless I hear something differently, the proof that the government has that these were classified stands. You know, there's this big difference that they have with what Trump and Giuliani and all these people say out of court versus what their lawyers say in court under the rules of court. And, they got stuck on another issue as well. The issue of whether or not there was planted evidence, and they had nothing to say about that. Going back to classifications, Trump, did another out of court statement with Sean Hannity this week, and he revealed how he would declassify things just by thinking about it, which is really, really laughable, because there is a process to declassify, and you have to tell people whether they're declassified.
Well, Trump covered that. Trump said there could be a process, but there doesn't have to be a process.
A process, yeah.
I don't quite understand that. What do you mean there doesn't have to be a process? Everything is a process. How can there not be a process?
Well, this is the thing when you want to run the world like Donald Trump ran his company.
But even that's a process.
Is, yeah, I set the rules. You know, they are whatever I say they are at the time I say they are. But of course, now his company rule ran into problems in court in New York State. Letitia James came out with a 200 and some paragraph indictment.
Page.
That was pretty specific in things. I mean, I know you've
Some of it is funny. I tell you the truth. Some of it is funny. And I don't quite understand how he argues against it. She says, as a proof that he lied about the value of his property, she gives an example. He has an apartment in Trump Tower, which is 10,000 square feet. That's a pretty big apartment, but that's what it is, 10,000 square feet. He says it's 30,000 square feet. Well, it's either 10,000 or 30,000. You know, this tape measure doesn't lie. Well, sometimes he said it's 10,000. That was when he was looking for tax relief. Sometimes he says it's 30,000. That's when he's looking for a collateral for a big loan. Well, that's fraudulent. That's fraud.
Yes.
How do you argue against that? That's not.
Well,
he argues saying that, well, valuation is in the eye of the beholder. It's subjective. But the square footage of a piece of property is not subjective.
And, you know, he valued some of his units so extravagantly that the whole building that they're in wasn't worth what he was doing.
Right.
One of the things that that she said is that he entered in essentially a conspiracy with his accountant for over the years to always increase his net worth so that he could be rated as, you know, in terms of billionaire status every year.
Yeah, on the Forbes list, he wanted to be up there.
Yeah. On the Forbes list. The thing is that, Michael Cohen, who turned on him, unlike other people, gave her a roadmap of what to look for and what have you. And don't forget, she now has a guilty plea from Alan Weisselberg, who wouldn't necessarily turn directly against Trump, but he turned against the Trump organization. And her powers are pretty strong in terms of that. Remember, they forced the Trump Foundation to disband,
right?
Because of its fraud. And you know, Trump's other defense is, well, I'm dealing with banks, and they could have verified this stuff. They have expertise. But
in fact, that is his defense. He says they've got good lawyers, and it's their job to do due diligence, not my job. And I told them to do it. Don't rely on the papers I'm giving you. But the problem there is that the law says you got to give truthful papers when you apply for a loan.
Right. It's not that I can lie, and if you don't catch me, that's your problem.
Which is his point of view.
Right. Which is still, it's still a lie, and it's still fraud.
Yeah.
And it's still fraud. And
but he's not going to jail. I think that if anybody thinks that means he's going to go to jail, like you would if you did it, that's not going to happen. Because politics trumps law.
But don't forget, these are still civil suits. The question is whether anybody in the feds in New York, or whether the Manhattan DA now decides that Biggs decides that he's going to reverse his stance and let him off the hook. We'll have to see. We also have to see about Georgia. They continue to have the investigation down there. And that's a pretty direct fraud. You know, people signed their names to being electors that they weren't valid electors. And now they have them inside places where they shouldn't have been inside, where they're counting votes. So one of those persons said, well, I was only in there for a few moments. Turns out she was in for, 3 or 4 hours.
And how about where they came in? They copied all the data. The data was sequestered, but they broke through it and they copied it. And it turned out that they didn't put it out on the internet. Now, that's what they did. They were proud about doing that. So how can they now say they're innocent? But Trump says they can't be prosecuted because there's executive privilege.
Executive privilege. That's something that's...
And Kavanaugh says, well, Trump may have executive privilege, Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the 11th Circuit is still mulling certain things. But one thing we found out about the 11th Circuit and John Deary, the special master, is they're working quickly. They're not giving Trump a lot of his delay.
Well, that's a real defeat for Trump, right? Because Trump's strategy is delay, not necessarily win. He doesn't necessarily want to win. He wins if there is a delay. So there's two ways he can lose. And he's so far lost one of the two ways. He didn't get the delay.
Yeah.
By the way, to me, there's an important point here. It may be a semantic point, but it's an important conceptual point. People argue liberals in opposition to Trump's Stop the Steal say there's no evidence of a steal. That's true. There is no evidence of a steal. But the fact that there's no evidence of a steal means that there's evidence that there was no steal. Therefore, there is evidence. I think you should be saying there's evidence that there's no steal. That's the way to put the point. Because if you say there's no evidence of a steal, people can hear that and say, at this moment, there's no evidence of a steal, but there's probably buried evidence because there's a conspiracy. But if you say there is evidence, and the evidence is shows that there was no steal, that's a different way to put it, and that's a different conclusion. But it's the same set of facts.
Right. Now, on that subject, we're going to have another hearing this week from the January 6th committee. And I understand it's going to be more about the money and the funding. And
Trump, who raised $200 million from his suckers, has so far spent almost nothing on the Republican candidates. He spent it all on himself, including money to pay for Melania's wardrobe. But nothing for the candidates. But he still does have several hundred million dollars that he could unload if he makes a decision in the next week or two.
Well, we'll have to see. I don't think he'll spend it on anybody but himself. You know, this week we also found out that Ginny Thomas is going to testify, at least to some extent, before that committee.
She's going to appear. You really think she'll testify? Won't she just say, I declined to testify about myself?
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, that's the weakness here. It's true you can haul them up before whatever you want to haul them up, but that doesn't mean they have to testify.
Well, that was Doug Mastriano did that.
Trump did that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and some of the others, you know, took the Fifth Amendment.
Well, that is, that's right. Like, that's how they do it.
That's
the Fifth Amendment says you need not testify against yourself. That's what it says.
And that's perfectly fine.
It's perfectly fine. And no inference can be made that you're guilty of anything because you declined to testify against yourself.
Right.
But if
right.
you think that just because somebody gets called up to testify, that yeah. means that you're going to learn anything, you've got another thing coming.
Yeah. You know, we started off here about talking about the Republican Party and Lincoln and ideas. One of the ideas that they've always had is this trickle-down economics, and the tax cuts will, for the rich particularly will
help. Which has always been proven wrong.
Yeah. And, of course, now over in England, Liz Truss, the new prime minister, is going full-bore Margaret Thatcher on that theory again. It was interesting when I was over in England a year ago with my son. The Tory party was labeling their platform Build Back Better, where we hear that before. Now, and that was one of the big things in who was going to succeed Boris Johnson is which way were they going to go? Because the Tories were going to have to raise taxes in order to pay for things. Liz Truss is doing deficit spending, much like Ronald Reagan did with the defense, and she's going to lower taxes. And meanwhile, the British pound is down to about $1.10.
Pound is down to $1.10, and the interest rates in England are going up.
Yeah. A year ago, it was like $1.30.
Right.
The euro was with parity.
No, it wasn't $1.30. A year ago, it was 70 cents.
Well, when you
in other words, it was weaker. There's less purchasing power that you have in England today.
Yeah.
For the money,
yeah. Well, every dollar was worth, for every dollar was $1.30. The pound was $1.30. Now it's $1 to $1.10. You're right. It's purchasing power, and it's the way economics works. So we've got all of those things going. And
well,
we
this
have
is what Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize winner, who writes for the New York Times, calls zombie economics. In other words,
zombie economics.
Ideas that experience proves don't work, are wrong, incorrect, are constantly resorted to. They don't die because reactionaries in wherever the country they are, ideologues who have a stake in lower taxes because it's their taxes that get lowered, keep saying this'll save you. This'll save you. And every time the only one who gets saved is the guy who's promoting it. Everybody else suffers. Here we are, about to enter the new year for those who are. I'll see you next year.
You'll see you next year. All right.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.